Welcome into the NHL At The Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here. As always, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we're in the semifinals. Time flies, man. We're already in the semifinals, and we're through two games with the Tampa Bay Lightning and New York Islanders, and we are recording this on Wednesday, June 16th, and the Vegas Golden Knights and Montreal Canadiens are going to play game two tonight. I can't believe we're already here, Rick.
No, and we could, depending on results, be in the Stanley Cup final within a week by the next time we do this, which is just crazy. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think at least one of these series, if not both, are going to go much deeper. It's, to me, the funniest thing about playoffs is how quickly your mindset changes, right? And I have no idea how the players deal with it, but you lose one game and all of a sudden, like, you're looking at the schedule and you're like, oh, maybe there's not going to be a game five. And then the next thing you know, they're playing a game seven and you've completely forgotten that after game one, you were ready to write off the losing team. So, and, you know, we saw that, I think, in Tampa Bay, completely off their game in game one, to the point where players were saying they were disinterested, and didn't have the fire they needed. They certainly solved that in game two. And now I think we have the makings of a pretty long series.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. I mean, we also saw last round, Colorado blows the doors off of Vegas in game one, right? Doesn't play that well in game two, but they get a 2-0 lead. And we're thinking, I know I was thinking, well, here goes Colorado. They're racing to the Stanley Cup this year and they lose four in a row. You know, it changes so fast. For on a smaller scale example of that, going into game one of the Tampa Bay Islander series, I didn't even consider the fact that the Lightning didn't have a goal from a defenseman, right? In the playoffs, didn't even consider it. They lose game one. It's the first time they've lost a game one in the playoffs this year. In fact, they were up 2-0 in the other two series. And all of a sudden, that stat creeps out and it shows up. And it's just like, hey, their defense hasn't scored. Well, maybe they need goals from their defense to win. Oh, my God, they need goals from their defense to win. They better get goals from their defense or they can't beat the Islanders. That's not true. I mean, then what happens game two? They get two goals from the defenseman and they win. It's amazing how quickly the storylines change, the mindsets change. And even the guys, even Victor Hedman, after the game said, we didn't even think about it. It becomes a storyline. And we're like, well, we better go out and change that. And they do. It just happens so fast. So now it's a 1-1 series. And as John Cooper said after game two, it should be a 1-1 series. And he's right.
Yeah. But I do think that the Lightning are probably lamenting a lost opportunity in game one. Right. It's always shocking to me, you know, and Vegas kind of said the same thing, and they had the built-in excuse against Colorado and that they had gone seven and Colorado had been sitting and waiting for them at altitude, everything else that went into it. But to give away games at this stage is just horrific. And we're going to have Scotty Gomez on a little while talking about his project. Scotty goes and, you know, he talks a little bit about how this is the time of your life when you get deep in the playoffs. This is what you live for as a player. And again, to not have the focus and just let a game slip away, but you're playing every other day for 2 months. Like, those things are going to happen. It's the teams that are able to put that behind them. And I think, you know, the exact stat probably, but the Tampa Bay Lightning haven't lost two games in a row since they lost to the Columbus Blue Jackets a couple of years ago in the huge upset that kind of fueled this run. That's, to me, that might be the most impressive thing about this team.
They're 11-0 in games after a loss. So they were 7-0 last year and so far 4-0 in the playoffs this year in games following a loss. And you did mention Scott Gomez, former NHL player. He is going to be, we did talk to him. He's doing the series Scotty Goes, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. It's a 5-episode series, Facebook, Instagram, TV. He catches up with some former teammates, kind of sees what they're up to. It's a lot of fun and the interview is a lot of fun. So definitely stay tuned for that as well. But yeah, no, the Lightning, Sean, I mean, that's what makes a championship team. You know, I mean, when you realize the error of your ways and you're able to rectify it quickly, although I almost like cringed when you said, you know, it was a lost opportunity for them. You know, they let one slip away, because I'm thinking of the way the Islander fans would react to that, you know, because the Islanders would, oh, but the Islanders won. They won. And they did. They played a very strong playoff game in game one, but Tampa Bay, you know, they gave them the puck like half the night was just giveaways.
Well, the Islander fan would argue that they took the takeaways, puck. Right? But look, I'm so far gone in the Islander fan base hierarchy that I could say that they were the best team since the Montreal Canadian dynasty teams. And I couldn't make up the ground that I've already seeded in that argument. So I'm not all that worried about that. I think even Barry Trotz after game one was like, that's not the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah. Like, we expect a different team, and they got a different team. They got a team that was engaged, that skated, that was snarly. To me, in the playoffs, one of the biggest advantages that the Islanders have had is their fourth line just dominates people. It goes out and it changes the tone of a game by having really good shifts, one after another, some intimidation, some zone time, putting everything together, putting a hurt on star players that they can hit. And nobody in the first two rounds has really had an answer. And then they bring out their big line and they kind of continue that momentum. To me, and you saw it in game two, the Tampa Bay Lightning have an answer. They have guys that can do the exact same thing and really negated that ability to kind of get that role going. And, you know, they were able to answer physically and blunt some of that emotion that I think the Islanders get from that fourth line.
Yeah. And they didn't have that in game one. And it's almost jarring when you hear players say we weren't engaged. Right. And you mentioned that before, because it's the playoffs. How could you not be engaged? You know, I mean, come on, but they're human beings, you know, like they're human beings. And I do think this as well. And this is why I like, there's a couple of reasons why the series is 1-1. And I think Tampa, I was picking Tampa in seven, no reason to change that at all. I think this is a series that can go back and forth a little bit, but hindsight being what it is, the Islanders are a completely different opponent from what the Lightning have faced in the first two rounds. Carolina was aggressive. Everything was pushing up the ice. Everything was going. Florida was just run and gun. I mean, they're just up and down, run and gun. And that's how that series went. That's how you get a 6-5 game in that type of series. The Islanders sag back. They don't give you much. They wait for you to make mistakes. They almost patiently lull you into mistakes. And I think that was a tough adjustment for the Lightning in game one. Even though they saw them in the playoffs last year and they knew what they were getting into, they didn't play them at all during the regular season. And they didn't play a team like them in the regular season either, I don't think. Whereas the Islanders just played Boston and just played Pittsburgh, who are more in line with what Tampa Bay does. I don't think they're as good, but they're in line with that type of style. So I don't think it was as big of an adjustment for the Islanders facing a new opponent as it was for Tampa Bay. And I think that showed up. And then Tampa Bay adjusted. And now it's going to be a series of adjustments, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, let's not be too hard on the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, I've covered a few Stanley Cup finals in my life, and I've written a bad story or two. And it's the pinnacle of my career, too. Like, you can write a bad story in November and nobody notices. You write a bad story in June, you're going to beat yourself over it pretty good. But it still happens. I mean, it happens to everybody. And again, like I said, it's the team that's able to answer to that, right? And I think you're going to see that in the other series, right? As we switch gears and we go to Vegas and Montreal. Montreal has to find an answer. They, you know, the first 10 minutes of that game one, they were good. And you were like, oh, maybe I did undersell them. I know Dan didn't, because they're the best team in the North. But maybe I undersold them. And then all of a sudden, Vegas found their footing, and there was nothing there. Like, after the first 10 minutes, if Carey Price isn't playing in goal for the Montreal Canadiens, that's an 8-1 game.
Mm-hmm.
So now Montreal has to find some answers. And I don't know if they can go like Tampa Bay did and said, you know what, we didn't show up in game one. I thought they played a pretty good game, and they still got run pretty hard.
So that's why, I mean, look, if you're listening to this after game two, we don't know that's going to happen. We're recording this before game two. If you're listening to this, you know, Thursday, we're recording this Wednesday. So we don't know. But regardless of what happens in game two, I don't have the same feeling about this series, the Canadiens in Vegas, as I do about the Islanders and Lightning, where it's a little bit more of a toss-up. This is Vegas. This is Vegas' series to lose. If they lose this series, and this is not a knock on the Montreal Canadiens, but if the Vegas Golden Knights lose this series, shame on them, because they are the better team. And it's not, and frankly, it's it's probably closer than we think because the parity in the league is closer than we think. It's not that different from between the teams that don't make it and the teams that do. But top to bottom, you look at the Vegas Golden Knights and you're like, they are that much better, at least on paper, than the Montreal Canadiens. And then they showed it for 50 minutes in game one. So if they were to lose this series, shame on them. Whereas, because this is a major step up, all things considered, with what the North Division was this season. And with respect to Toronto and Winnipeg, this is a massive step up for the Montreal Canadiens. And they won't win this series if Carey Price is not the best player in the world. And that's asking a lot from your goaltender.
Yeah, I mean, there were 23 points difference between these two teams. Yeah. And in a 56-game season, like, that's almost a point every time.
And Vegas was playing in a division that had Colorado and St. Louis. You know, I mean, it wasn't a great division, but it had Colorado and St. Louis in it.
And Minnesota.
You know, yeah. And Minnesota was really good. Yeah. So, whereas Montreal, I mean, look, Edmonton got swept in the first round. They finished second in that division, you know. So, Winnipeg got swept by Montreal. It's not the same.
No, and I think it has to be a little sobering how human they made Carey Price look in the second part of the series. Like, the goal that sticks with a second part of the game, the goal that sticks with me from that first one, I think it was the last goal where, you know, the puck goes cross seam and Carey Price is diving like Superman.
Yeah.
Like, just everything akimbo, like, please let me get at this. And he's like 3 seconds late. Like, the dude's already raising his stick up in the air and skating away. And you're like, well, we didn't see that in the first two rounds. Like, that just never happened.
It's happening now. You know, it's happening now. And I got to tell you, the more I watch Vegas, almost every time I watch Vegas, I gain a greater appreciation for the type of player Mark Stone is. And I know he's good, Sean. Like, I know how good he is, and I know how impactful he is in a game. But every single time I watch him play, I'm just more and more impressed with everything he can do, from the stick work to the skating to the physicality to the leadership. You know, he's always involved, always in the – I mean, we talk about Tampa Bay had, you know, admitted that they had some players that were disengaged from game one. Mark Stone's never going to be disengaged from a game. It doesn't matter what time of year it is.
No, and I think the difference in this series is, you look at the last two series, right? Minnesota had a pretty good first line, and sometimes they were matched together. And that's where, you know, Mark Stone's, I think, true value is that how good defensively he is. Right? I mean, he's Selke worthy every year, in my opinion. And then in the second round, here comes Nathan MacKinnon. And I think Mark spends so much time and has so much pride in shutting people down that he plays against. The Canadians don't really have that. Like, the Canadians are putting a shutdown guy against him.
Against him. It's totally different. Right.
And so he really has the opportunity now to try and go a little bit more than maybe he did in the first two rounds. And I'm really interested to see what that translates into.
Let me ask you this question, because I got it for the mailbag. We do the mailbag return today. And it's not necessarily related to this series, but it's related to the Vegas Golden Knights. I actually got asked the question, is Marc-Andre Fleury a Hall of Famer? Is he, you know, because, you know, hey, you know, he had to resurrect his career, all this stuff. Isn't it a no-brainer that Marc-Andre Fleury should be in the Hall of Fame? The three-time Stanley Cup winner, maybe a four-time Cup winner, has been to the Stanley Cup Finals 5 times, played in, what, 3 of them, right? He could finish 3rd in wins, if not 2nd in wins. He could pass Patrick Roy in overall wins. He could be the first goaltender to get the 500 wins in fewer than 900 games. I mean, maybe not the first goal. I think Marty Brodeur did that, but is this not a lock for Marc-Andre Fleury, or does he need to win again?
I don't think he needs to win again. I'm kind of shocked that that's a question, not to not to beleaguer your mailbag quality. But
I got to tell you, it was a great answer.
Yeah, I bet it was. And you just laid out a pretty good case. Look, I would also argue, let's just argue playoff wins, right? Like, he's 3 away right now from passing Grant Fuhr. And then he's got Marty in his sights, and I don't think he's getting to Patrick Waugh. But and then think about what he did for Vegas.
Yeah.
Like, he was the guy that they built the whole team around. And they've been around for 4 years, and they've been in three third rounds, with him being the driving force for almost all of it. Like, there's no question in my mind. And then he's a good guy on top of it all, and maybe that shouldn't enter into it, but it's going to, because yeah, people are human. People are human, and if they get treated like jerks, they're going to be like, maybe I went late. You know, maybe this guy waits a little bit. And you're a nice guy. Oh, yeah, he's in. So I think he has the complete package to get into the Hall of Fame.
I mean, I'd be shocked if in his first year that he's eligible, he doesn't get 75% or more of the votes from the selection committee. Because, I mean, there isn't a person in the National Hockey League or has been around the National Hockey League, I think, that can say a bad word also about Marc-Andre Fleury on or off the ice. Anyway, I just want to throw that out there. You know, because
I don't think it's a first ballot. Like, I think there's still some of those politics, and you know, where do you put him behind Martin Brodeur and Ken Dryden, and you know what I mean? First. Like there's things there that would play into that. But I think it's a foregone conclusion.
I think it's first. I think he should be first based on everything he's done. There's very few goaltenders who have done more than Marc-Andre Fleury has done, and completely helped build an entire organization at the same time too. No, not many have done that as either. Anyway, so we teased it before, so let's get to it. We were able to catch up with Scott Gomez. Both of us covered him a little bit when he was with the Devils. Scotty Goes, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, is a 5-episode series on Facebook and Instagram, and it debuts Thursday, June 17th. So that's tomorrow. Where Scott Gomez kind of goes around, talks to former teammates of his and catches up with them, does a bunch of things. It's a lot of fun, and it was a lot of fun catching up with Scotty. So here is that interview with Scott Gomez. Scotty, thanks so much for hopping on with us. So Scotty Goes, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. You go a lot of places, right?
Yeah.
tell us about it. I mean, how'd you get involved with this? You know, it's going to be on Facebook, Instagram, TV. How did you get involved with all this?
Well, it all started with, you know, I was going back home in March last year, and, you know, don't retire. It's boring. And, I needed something to do. So I was going to want to do these Alaskan documentary series with other Alaskans. I mean, there's a bunch of us, and there was, you know, 7 of us that played in the NHL, 3 NBA guys, handful of football guys, Olympians. So I thought it'd be cool if, you know, they get some exposure besides just me and some other guys. And the pandemic happened, and the guy I partnered up with, TJ Webb, he kind of had the same idea. So we were going to start that, and we're just, you know, he couldn't really interview anyone because no one knew what was going on. So we, you know, got a camera guy there, and I said, dude, I used to mess around with my teammates about Alaska. Like, you know, just, we'd be in the bus, and I'd be like, we'd pass like a Best Buy. And I'd tell like Steve Valachetta, I'd be like, yeah, that's the size of my house. And there's a river and a lake that goes behind it and the mountains. And, you know, if we're lucky, when you come up, this mountain lion will wake us up, and, you know, it goes, rah, or whatever they make a sound. And so guys, when they came up to Alaska and they saw where I live, my house, I grew up in, you know, where's this mountain lion? So anyway, it led to making just funny videos. We called it Scotty's House. And we did these story times. We started going around seeing old teammates, and yeah, the NHL called, and they loved the idea, and they had the idea to make a show, and they, you know, they named it Scotty Goes. And we went around in a shuttle, one of those shuttle vans or travel vans. And yeah, just saw old teammates, and that was our idea. And then they wanted to pick it up. And then, yeah, so we got 5 guys, and yeah, the show, we'll see how it goes. Scotty Goes.
I'm so jealous. That's basically my retirement dream. My wife and my daughter have already told me that it's off the table, but my retirement dream is to get an RV and just drive wherever the wind takes me.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. And then, you know, just like anything, after a week or two, you know, I could kill the other guy I was with. And it was great. Got to see guys, but, you know, we put in a lot of miles. I think something like 30,000 miles or something crazy like that. And, But it was a great experience, and glad I did it. And, you know, like I said, I got to see a lot of the guys, and that was fun.
What was it like to be the one you're that sits down and you're interviewing them, former teammates. And, you know, I mean, you guys have been in battles together. You know, whatever it may be. And now you're just trying to have some fun, but you're asking questions, you're interviewing them. And what was that whole experience like being that way?
You know, that's a great question. At first it was, you know, always on you guys thinking, no, that can't be hard and whatever. But yeah, I mean, it was in the beginning, I think you could tell, you know, especially the Scotty's house, the Scotty Goes, that show, I kind of got the hang of it a little bit more. I mean, but you do have to do, you got to do homework. I mean, I had to do research. I mean, these are my buddies, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, you kind of followed a pattern. What questions, here we go. And you know, once we started BSing, it was pretty easy because we just started telling old stories and, you know, reminiscing on what happened this day, that day. But in the beginning, yeah, I mean, you could tell it was like, it's like the first time you kind of get interviewed when you're a kid. And I mean, someone will show an interview when you're like 14 or 15, you're just like, God. And then you know, by the end, you're pretty used to it. But so that was kind of like that. I mean, I guess a lot of respect to you guys because it wasn't that easy.
Well, finally, somebody has respect. Finally, that's cool. Yeah. I think the first show, we're doing this on Wednesday. I think the first show premieres tomorrow on Thursday, and it's with Marty Brodeur. I was lucky enough to get a sneak peek. And I have two questions for you. The first one is, who won the golf match?
You know what? I think we ended up tying. I think Marty, he's way better than me. But what pisses me off is the camera had some issues. So the first four holes, I was minus one, but of course, you know, the camera's not there, but yeah. And then, you know, sometimes where he was, the camera angle was at, like Marty kind of gave me a hint. He's like, hey, if you hit a bad shot, just pose. And cause he won't see where the ball's going. So there was one, I mean, a couple times I just shanked one and I just stood there just admiring it. So I don't know if that's going to get in, but yeah, I think I'd have to talk to Marty. I think he ended up tied though. I was on that day. I mean, something happened and he was off, but yeah, I'm gonna check that out, I guess.
And the second one is, and I'm curious, I know you gave him a little stick on the show about his mustache when he got drafted. Today's actually the anniversary of that, yeah, of when the Devils drafted him, and a couple of different people have posted that picture. But when you guys were players, how much was that the go-to whenever you need to put Marty back in his place? Was that draft day mustache?
No, it was you know, in the beginning, you know, it's Marty Brodeur, so you're kind of, you know, you're not really getting on him. But as we got older, I know that John Madden used to always, you know, always question that, like, what the hell were you thinking? And then Marty just, you know, has the same response. Mustaches were in. My older brothers had them. And we just wanted to know, when were they in? And when did they look like that? And what porn station was that on? Because, you know, Marty, one thing about Marty, and I can't say, like, I got lucky with the goaltenders I played with because, you know, you'd hear horror stories like, some guys you couldn't talk to before games, or, you know, Marty was always there for the ribbing. And this is even during in between periods, during the before. I mean, the guy was so relaxed. And so, yeah, everyone was a free game on that. But it was also, it was a tough room where you had to be sharp, especially when Jim McKenzie was there, because you couldn't just go back to, you know, old stuff. Like a Mexican joke was too easy, like, cause I'm Mexican, Colombia, like, okay, what fun is that? Like, or the way I watch. So, yeah, you know, everyone had guys had to be pretty sharp in that room. I mean, the trash talking was pretty good.
The mustache was great. Every time I see the picture, it's just great. I love that. When were those ever in? The one that I caught a quick glimpse of, the one you did with Adam Oates. And there was a point in that where I saw your face at one point, and he's on the ice and he's coaching, right? I mean, he's showing you details and you're looking at him like you were literally the player listening to the coach. And, you know, did that take, I mean, were you the player listening to the coach when he was doing it?
You know, I got fortunate that when Adam, when Otsi and Scotty came, I mean, I owe Pete DeBoer a lot because he gave me, you know, a chance again, and, you know, sure, I could still play. And, but when Otsi came in, I mean, you talk about learning a different aspect of the game was just incredible. I mean, and it wasn't just me. I mean, you can ask, you know, Travis Ajak, you know, all the guys that were there. I mean, it was literally, you were learning something every day, and it didn't matter if you were on the top line or the fourth line. I mean, to the tricks of the trade, the angles, the guy was genius on that. So when we got back on the ice this time around, my back wasn't all feeling that great. So the first couple drills that we always do, you know, Otsi's kind of looking at me like, what the hell happened to you? Like, let's go. So I was kind of getting yelled at for there in the beginning because, you know, they're sliding off. But, you know, yeah, it was definitely, I mean, it just, and it's also being on the ice with Otsi, it kind of just, you love it in the same time you hate it because I got him later in my career where if I would have had this guy's mind and learning this stuff earlier on, I mean, you know, proud of my career, but yeah, it was definitely the guy's genius on the ice, but being back, yeah, it's like anything. People ask about hockey, you miss being on the ice, and you don't, but once you do get on it, you're like, oh man, here's those drills, you know, it brings you back, and it's always fun.
So who else is in the series?
This one we got Marty Brodeur, Adam Oates, Steve Valiquette, Tori Mitchell, the guys from Elevate 802 up in Vermont. This guy named Sneaky Pete that can do stuff with Swaggy Pete. Sorry, I always say Sneaky Pete, but Swaggy Pete. I mean, what this guy can do on the ice is with the stick. I mean, when you see that episode, you know, people think that just because we play in the NHL, we can do stuff like that. I mean, me and Mitchie were sitting there like, I could practice probably for a year and couldn't do stuff this guy did with the stick. And so that was incredible. And of course we got the king in there, Ken Danico. And, me and Dano, we played ping pong. And if you see the episode, I mean, I don't know what they're going to show. I haven't seen him, but I mean, he's sweating. And I don't want to be a spoiler alert who won best 2 out of 3, but yeah, it was back to like being in the locker room again with the ping pong table. Cause we were both going at it. And, but yeah, so that was start with those and see where that goes.
So yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, have you found something new that you really can sink your teeth into here that you really enjoy?
I mean, first and foremost, you got to find some. I mean, right now golf, so I'm golfing every day, but it was neat getting back with the guys and, like with Steve Valiquette, what he's doing with the numbers and, not analytics, but it's more explaining like, you know, giving you an idea where like guys score, what not to do, you have a better chance of this. And, you know, if you're an offensive player, and I mean, all we care about is points. And, you know, you're getting little tricks of the trade. So getting to learn from what these guys are doing, getting to see with them and obviously reminiscing. Yeah. I mean, it's something that, I guess the main thing is if the fans like it, cause I know when we grew up, I know growing up, it was nothing better when you got to see behind the scenes and seeing your favorite players or seeing what actually pro athletes do. And I think that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
Has it scratched an itch at all to maybe explore the media?
No, because then I probably end up like you guys and that doesn't look fun. So, but no, I, it,
it's, there's way more glamorous jobs than we have, Scott.
Yeah, no, it all depends. Cause I mean, I'm a huge, I mean, I could watch and I YouTube it all the time. I mean, I could watch Charles Barkley and that show, you know, Shaq, or, you know, I could watch that all day. Like, just, I think the main thing is like, if there was a hockey show or some, it's who you're with. It's the chemistry. I mean, it's just, I think that's the most important thing. And me, me always being a team guy and a passer, I mean, hey, my strength was always giving the puck to someone else. He puts it in the net and I think that's kind of the same with like, you learn from like the media and stuff. I mean, you know, I was on the network and it was a great experience, but you know, sometimes you might be paired with someone that you're just, it's not hidden. It's not, there's no flow there. And I think that's sometimes what our game misses. Like when you watch the episode with Valiquette, I mean, all the guys, but especially with Steve Valiquette, I mean, you could tell that you put a camera in front of us. I mean, we could go back and forth with each other. And I think that'd be something kind of cool. But no, like I said, we just did this. They picked it up and we'll see where it goes. And hopefully people enjoy it.
You know, I wanted to ask you, because what we're doing now, the way media is done now with the NHL because of the pandemic and everything, is everything's on Zoom, right? So yeah. There's no access in the locker room for us in the media. You guys are basically talking into a camera all the time. You're not seeing anybody, not you guys, I mean the players now. Yeah. Did you enjoy the give and take in the locker room, whether it be after practice, morning skate, or even after a game? Like, did you like it when our colleague now, Tom Galitti, would come up to you and ask some questions, or, you know, former Star Ledger guy, Rich Scher, would come up and ask, like, did you enjoy the give and take in the locker room? Cause it seemed like you did.
I think once, it's a great question. Once they got the personality, it was awesome. Like, and you know, I'm kind of a sports historian. So growing up, you always heard about, like, you know, the media and how, you know, it was closer back then. And I mean, let's face it, playing for the Devils, we were, you know, you kind of learned to don't trust them. But hey, you guys got to do your job. You guys got to, you know, you got to be, you're humans too. So I think once, like, Richie and Tom, especially those two guys, and like Mark Everson and stuff, once they got my personality, once, I mean, we were basically just talking BS to each other and they're giving it right back. And so I think that people, maybe a new media member would come in and right away think, like, wow, you know, Scott Gomez, what a jerk. He just said that to whatever, but, you know, they're giving it right back. Like, me and John Giannone, especially in, like, Stan Fischer, the way me and Fish would go at it, I mean, we got, like, there'd be emails sent about, you know, I can't believe how rude Scott Gomez was to Stan Fischer, John Giannone. And as soon as the camera light would go off, we'd be the two just laughing. Like, because, yeah, I mean, and that made it fun. I think that was kind of my, instead of just answering the same questions, yeah, I gave 100%, this, you know, that, it was more of, hey, you're going to ask me questions. I'm going to ask you something back and see if you're on your toes. And so, yeah, I enjoyed it with those guys. I mean, and I think the older I got, like, you know me, I never took, because of Joe Neudyke and Pat Burns, I got to a point where I stopped reading the papers. I stopped watching. It just, they installed that and probably saved my life in Montreal there. But that 1 year, but I remember one time in Montreal, a guy was talking to me. I was talking back to him or just whatever. And afterwards, you know, someone came up to me and was like, how can you even talk to that guy? And I'm like, why? They're like, you should see what this guy writes about you all the time. And I'm like, hey, I don't even know who he is. What did he can, you know, but, yeah, there was a couple times. One time, Richie Scher, he did kind of – it's when Niedermeyer left, and I think we lost. You know, we weren't doing that well in the beginning, and most teams would probably be happy with that. But we were actually, like, I don't know, 3 games above 500 or something, and they were all over Larry. And I remember saying to either Whitey or Pandolfo, right, like, Richie Scher was around, and I did that – I said the Bill Parcells quote. I go, why are they all? And I was just talking to Whitey. I wasn't talking to the media at all. And I said, you know, why are they all over him? You know, he didn't shop for the groceries, but he's got to cook the dinner. And Richie Scher put that in the next day in the paper. And I'm close friend, you know, always had a great relationship with Richie. And now the next day, anonymous, whatever. And that was one thing about Lou. He didn't care what you said, but you better put your name behind it. So the next day in the paper, you know, now it's a big drama. Who said it? Well, there's only two guys that everyone thought it'd be me and Madden. And so I had to go up to Lou and say, hey, it was me, but I didn't say it on the record. You know, it's just, I wasn't even talking to a reporter. So sometimes you had to watch that, but guys were good. I mean, it was fine.
I'm sure that was a comfortable conversation.
Not really, because I went up to him and I said, hey, I'm the one that said it, but here's what happened. And yeah. Lou loved it because it kind of was throwing a jet. You know, Lou had a, you know, it's not what everyone thinks about Lou. He kind of liked that little spice, kind of like that, you know, little drama, whatever. But I manned up to it. But I said to him, I did not talk to the, I wasn't talking to anyone. I said it, and you know, and I went up to Richie and I kind of got mad at him. I was like, hey, and he goes, yeah, I'm sorry. It was just it was such a good quote. I had to put that in there and whatever. So it was Bill Parcells' quote.
So if you continue this show, is there a wish list guy that you need to get on?
Well, I mean, it'd probably be up to the fans. I mean, who they want to see. And also, you know, that's, you know, I think the NHL, they get, because I had to put a list of guys, and, you know, there were some guys that due to the whatever, the history or the controversy, they didn't want. So it's basically, I think they're the boss on that. But, you know, we'll see. We'll find out, because there's a bunch of other guys that, you know, you put us together in a camera. It's pretty funny. And there's some guys that are doing some, you know, some cool stuff, and like that were huge in the league, and it's kind of neat how they've evolved, and you know, and it doesn't have to be in with hockey. I mean, it's what they're doing outside of life.
So I wanted to, before we let you go, I definitely wanted to bring it current to what's going on in the league now. Just quickly, you have the Islanders there. They have Travis Zajac. They got Andy Green and obviously Lou, and you know these guys very well. I don't know how much you're watching or how close of attention you're paying, but to see Lou still doing it, to see Travis still chasing it, I mean, does it mean anything to you to see these types of things, to see Andy Green still chasing it?
Oh, I mean, first of all, you know, they're good friends and you're just happy they're still playing. And it's a line that everyone told us, you know, the older guys would always say to us is, hey, play as long as you can. Just keep going. Just keep going. You know, once it's over, it's over. Once you got to turn your locker room key in, it's never the same. I mean, I could walk into any NHL locker room and you're still kind of out of it. I mean, but to see the success and for those guys, let's face it, growing up with the Devils, you don't want to say it, but it's not like the regular season was boring, but playoffs is where it's at. I mean, that's when the fun came. It's like, that's when Claude Lemieux said best. I mean, the little boys go home, the men come now, you know, the men show up, and just to see Trav and Andy, or, you know, Greener, just to see them get a chance. I mean, cause we've all been in that, well, not you guys, but we've been in that situation, man, when you're getting in the conference finals and you're doing a playoff run. I mean, there's nothing better. I mean, it might be different with the pandemic or what's going on in the world, but I mean, your time, your life, sir, when you go on a long playoff run with the guys. And so just seeing them, I mean, you're happy for them, especially because last couple of years with the Devils, you know, not making the playoffs. And then with Lou, I mean, you know, he just, it's Lou. I mean, it's just probably one of those guys. I mean, just it's hockey's in his blood. I mean, you know, he'll probably go until he's 100, 102 or whatever.
All right, Scotty, before I let you go, I need to have you tell me a story. So the other day, Dallas, it was the anniversary of you guys beating Dallas in 2000. And that night, somewhere on Twitter, a picture showed up of Goldberg with Scott Stevens doing a pose off. Now, I've heard that you were the guy that got Goldberg involved in the whole thing. Can you tell me the backstory to that?
Yeah. So we beat Dallas and it's finally over. I mean, first and foremost, it's finally done. Like, cause the triple overtime, the double overtime. So me, Bobby Holik, I think Sergey Nemchinov, and I think Dog, John Madden, were outside the locker room. I think my dad was right there. And Brett Hall is walking with Goldberg. And kind of, you know, I've always been a wrestling fan, not to the extent of like Colin White, but yeah, I mean, wrestling, I mean, you know, I knew who it was. And, you know, I, you know, Brett Hall, legend, one of the best there is, great guy off the ice. And, you know, I talked to Holly, said, hey, you know, and, but then he was with Goldberg and I remember saying, hey, would you mind coming in the locker room? Like the guys, cause we had a lot of guys that liked wrestling, and he looked over at Brett Hall and Brett Hall was like, hey, go do it. You know, they were there together. Holly didn't care. So as we're walking in, Bobby Holik has no clue who Goldberg is, and he's got a Dallas Stars hat on. And so I introduced the guys that were outside. This is Goldberg. And Bobby, you know, with the voice he's got, he's like, I don't care who he is. You can't go in there with that hat. And so, like, you know, Goldberg just kind of, and we all were just like, yeah, he kind of made, you know, can't go. Anyway, he takes it off. He's massive. He goes in and Whitey, I mean, freaks out. Colin White starts freaking out. Everyone's, you know, it's Goldberg. I don't know how it happened, but, you know, I mean, I think like my moms were there flirting with Goldberg. I couldn't even, this guy is giant. And then next thing you know, I think I said, I don't want to take credit, but someone was like, who's got a better body, Scotty or Goldberg? And then next thing you know, I think everyone just started throwing it in there. And now Goldberg and Scotty, I mean, Scotty's a Greek god. His body, he's chiseled as can be. And so these guys are posing. And I was kind of a little more on the softer side, let's put it that way, at that time. And so now guys are like, Gomer getting. So the only glad thing I did wasn't take off my shirt in front of those two guys. But he was great in the room. We had a blast. He was awesome. And actually, later on that summer, they had WCW. So I was more of a WWE guy. But they had a big, like, event in San Diego. And they wanted me to be his, like, security guard and walk out. And it's one of the biggest regrets I didn't do because I – after the long season, but yeah, that's basically the Goldberg story. But It was great. I mean, he was awesome. And, you see the pictures, everyone. I mean, we were pretty jacked. He came in the room.
That is awesome. So you come to this podcast to hear about Goldberg. It's great. I love it. Scotty, this was fantastic. It was great catching up. Good luck with the whole series. Scotty Goes, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. 5 episodes. First one's Marty Brodeur, June 17th. That's tomorrow on Facebook and Instagram TV. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, guys. Anytime.
Great stuff there with Scotty. And also, we were able to hit on the playoffs a little bit with him too, with, his knowledge, obviously, of Lou Lamoriello, and played under him, played with Travis Zajac. So good stuff there with Scott Gomez. It was fun. I mean, we were smiling all the way through. Nobody could see, but we're smiling all the way through it because it's fun to catch up with guys that we used to cover.
Yeah, and he's always been a great storyteller, and I think that's the basis of this whole thing. Such a vibrant personality. I remember him coming in as a rookie, and he should have been intimidated with the team he walked into, and he really wasn't, probably to the surprise of some of the veterans on that team. But he's always been that way, and I thought the most cogent point he made was kind of, when talking about doing this and his approach is it's the same as it was when he played. He's always looking to dish to somebody else to let them have the glory. And like I said in the interview, I saw that first episode with Marty, and he does a pretty good job of that. Not that you have to dish too much to Marty to let him talk about how great he is.
I just like the fact that a couple of times he said, "That's a really good question," because we didn't get a lot of that when he was playing. Anyway, so that was a lot of fun. Definitely check out that series. It's fun. Scotty does a really good job with that stuff. So we touched on the playoffs on the front half of this before we got to the Scott Gomez interview. There's a lot of news going on already, though, on the back half. So let's hit on that. Gerard Gallant to the New York Rangers. Not official yet, because they haven't made it official yet, but it's happening. Gerard Gallant's going to be the new coach of the New York Rangers. And to me, Sean, and I cover the Rangers a lot. Once they fired David Quinn, they weren't going to hire another coach who didn't have experience in the National Hockey League. Gerard Gallant's got experience. This guy's coached over 500 games. He has taken a team to the Stanley Cup final, obviously in Vegas. He's a winner. He just won with Canada. He plays a style of game, an up-tempo, fast, fun type of style of hockey that I think the Rangers are going to enjoy playing with the depth that they have and the player personnel that they have. This is smart. I mean, I don't know how anybody could have a complaint about hiring Gerard Gallant to be the next coach.
Okay, well, I'll step in and take that role.
There we go. That's why we do this, Sean. We gotta have a dissenter. Give and take.
Look, he coached Canada at the World Championships this year and opened up 0-3. And I'm like, oh my God. I think Gerard Gallant's a great coach, and he opened up 0-3. And I'm like, he's not helping himself here at all. Like, that's why you don't take that job. That's why a lot of players didn't go and play in the Worlds, and he rescued it, and they ended up winning the gold medal. And, it's one of the best stories out of the World Championships in recent memory. And he deserves all the credit in the world for it. I think it's a year or two too early for the Rangers. Yeah.
Well,
like I think you look at that team and I said this when they let Quinn go, like, they're not ready. To me, they're not ready.
But that's a different argument. I wouldn't have fired David Quinn either. Right? That's a different argument.
But you're bringing in a win now coach
because they want to win now.
But I don't know that you can win now. Like, and what are you going to do to some of those young players, right? Like, I think about Kako and a couple other players. Like, I don't think Condrey Miller's going to be a concern because of the way that he adjusted. But even Lafreniere, like, you need a guiding hand. Like, you need to figure out how to get these guys to where they need to be, and then you win. Like, to kind of switch gears and say the rebuild's over when you're halfway through it, I think most outsiders would look at it and say, unless you have rose tinted glasses on as a Rangers fan, and you're like, dude, we're so close. Think about our division. Like, we can get out. If the Islanders can get it to the third round, we can get to the third round. They're very different teams. There's nobody on that Islander team that needs to be coddled anymore. No. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean in learning how to be a pro. And again, I'm not saying that Gerard Gallant can't do it, but I don't think anybody would put him at the top of the list of, hey, I need to develop a bunch of guys. Let's bring in Gerard Gallant.
But that's an organizational philosophy that they've went to. So when you, when they, like I said, once they fired David Quinn, they were not going to bring in another developmental guy, another guy that's going to come in and do those types of things. And that's why of the coaches who were available to them with the experience and the knowledge and the way that the system, the style that they play, I think it's a very smart hire for Gerard Gallant. But I agree with you, because I wouldn't have gotten rid of David Quinn in the first place. I would have stayed the course in that capacity, kept going in the direction they're going, and built it so it can have sustained success, because they've built it well, but right now we don't know. It's teetering. Can they have sustained success? Or if they get off to a slow start, what's that going to do to some of the younger players? Or if they get off to a fast start, what's that going to do to some of the younger players? You know, there's definitely a teetering going on there. They're not over the hump yet. That's why I would have stuck with David Quinn, but they didn't. So then once they made that move, you knew they were going with experience. That's why I don't think anybody can complain based on the philosophy that they're going under. You can complain about the philosophy itself, but what they're actually doing, this is the right hire.
Sure, I'll give you that. Again, I just look at the Colorado Avalanche and Gerard Bednar. Like, they're the same team, right? The Rangers and them in trying to rebuild, having a lot of really high-end picks, importing a lot of young players in, and they let Bednar do that, and the players are comfortable with it. And I guess you could argue that they haven't gotten out of the second round, but with the Rangers accept a couple of second round exits after what they've been through in the last couple of years.
Probably.
I just it's such a transient business, and I think, you know, unless there's something structurally wrong, a little patience never hurt anybody.
You can't fast track it. You just can't fast track this whole thing. It takes time. And then look at all the teams that win. Once they do get to that point, they have to go through heartbreak before they get over the hump. Look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. Look at the Washington Capitals. The Penguins won, and then they went through a lot before they could win again. You got to go through a lot to do it. So, I mean, hey, if Vegas were to go on and win this year, not an old franchise, but they've been through a lot in their short time in the National Hockey League, right? So you can't fast track it, but it's two different arguments that to be made there with the Rangers. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, that's the direction that they're going in right now. So we'll see. They got moves to make in the offseason as well. So we'll see what happens there. But he wasn't the only coach to get hired, I think, since we talked last. Brad Larson, Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, this is obviously a safer, cheaper hire with Columbus. He was an assistant coach under John Tortorella, learned the organization, learned under Tortorella, who, watching that press conference that Larson gave, he was emotional. I mean, he was breaking up when he was talking about John Tortorella and everything that Torts means to him. But he knows the team. He knows the players. He knows the GM. He knows the focus. He knows where they're going and the direction that they want to go in. I mean, I don't know if Brad Larson can – I don't know what type of head coach Brad Larson is going to be, but he's going to be given a lot of rope, I think.
Yeah, and he should. And look, I think Columbus is doing the right thing and has all along. Like, there's that continuity there through everything, right? And it kind of runs this philosophy. And so you're not bringing in an outside coach who's like, I'm going to blow this up. Like, this doesn't work for me. I want this. I need this. We got to have this. You know, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit, the end of the Bruins season and what happened there. And you know, Bruce Cassidy being like, I need an elite left-handed defenseman. So does everybody in the league.
Yeah. Let's find them.
You know, and management pushing back and being like, coaches want to open all the presents. They think every day is Christmas, you know, and I think Brad understands where Columbus is. I think he's lived it. I think he understands it. And I think most of all, he believes it. Like, a coach will say, you want a job, man. So the GM comes to you and he's like, we're going to do this and we're going to do this and we're going to do. Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah. Yarmo. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Where do I sign? Mm-hmm. And then you have the job and you're like, well, I don't want to do that. I want to do this. This is going to work better. Like, they have a guy who's going to be like, Yarmo, JD, I get it. Like, this is, we're all aligned here and we're going to go forward and we're going to do things the Blue Jackets way.
Yeah. And JD was on actually recently with Darren Millard, The Chirp with Darren Millard, that podcast. So you got to check that one out. JD, always a good interview. John Davidson back with Columbus now. You teed it up. Tuukka Rask, Boston Bruins. So, I mean, yeah, Bruce Cassidy wants an elite left-handed D. So do we all. But the big question for the Bruins now is in net, because Tuukka Rask is not signed. You know, he's a pending unrestricted free agent, can become one on July 28th, needs surgery, hip surgery, that's going to till January or February. That's half the NHL season if it starts in October, right? What do the Bruins do with their goaltending? I got a mailbag question about this, and I think it's actually, you can't go in with Swayman, Jeremy Swayman, or Dan Vladar as your number one. That's too premature for those guys. But if you really want to keep the books open for Tuukka, potentially to come back in January or February, then what do? You probably have to get a veteran goalie, and there's a lot of them, on like a one-year deal. See how that works for you. See if Swayman or Vladar take off, all right? Decide when Tuukka's getting closer to full health, if you want to go back to Tuukka, or how about this one? If Tuukka even wants to come back to you, right? Because when Tuukka's off for a while, is he going to want to keep playing? We don't know. So it's an interesting situation that Don Sweeney and the Boston Bruins have right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I have no idea where this storyline has come out. And again, I'm from that area, and I think I understand Boston fans a little bit, but this notion that Swayman is the answer after 10 games is preposterous. The fact that they're like, well, they should have played him during the playoffs because Tuukka was hurt. Like, are you kidding me? Like, where else in the world would you see somebody for 10 games and be like,
should have benched Brady for Garoppolo, Sean?
That kid's the future. Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Like, that kid's the future. Don't forget, they gave Drew Bledsoe his job back. After Brady played really well, they gave Drew Bledsoe his job back, and then he got hurt again, and then it was over. That's the part of the story a lot of people forget.
Right.
Guy, remember saying, come on, Drew, again, after I thought I would never say it again.
No, you're still thinking Mo Lewis, though. Come on.
So, but that's not the answer. And it's not the answer because later in that press conference or the next day or whenever it was in the trilogy, Cam Neely said, my guys want to win another cup. Bergeron and Marchand are telling me, we have to go for it again, and we have the pieces to go for it again. So you can't in one breath say, I'm going to take care of my veterans and we're going to be a cup contending team. And then in the other breath say, here's your two goalies.
One's 22. The other's what? 21.
Yeah. And neither one of them have 20 games of NHL experience together. They don't have 20 games of NHL experience. So I think what you need to do is you need to find your own Jack Campbell, right? You need to take one of these guys, and it's going to be easier with a flat cap, because there's a lot of goalies out there, like you mentioned, looking for jobs. And so it's going to be a buyer's market. You get a guy who, you know, maybe you can get on the cheap, but you like his analytics. You like the way he plays on his eye test, and you hope it turns into a Jack Campbell situation like Toronto had this year. And then you wait. I mean, Tuukka's made it a little easier because he said he don't want to play anywhere else. Like, you're not worried about somebody poaching him. Maybe he goes home and he plays in Finland if that's what he wants to do. But it's not like another team is going to come and you know, wow him and take him away. He's like, if I play, I want to play in Boston. This is where my family is. And, you know, this is what we enjoy. So they have the cushion of being able to kind of negotiate slowly and not have to make a rash decision.
Can't you see Tuukka being ready to come back right around Olympic time and going to play for Finland for the Olympics, whether NHL players are there or not? If he's not a signed NHL player, he can go, you know, regardless of what happens. Tuukka goes and plays in the Olympics, figures out if he wants to keep playing in the NHL, then he signs right after the Olympics. Didn't Brian Gionta do that a couple of years ago, right? I think he did. He went and played for Boston, actually, you know, in 2018. I could totally see something along those lines happen. But, I mean, look, the goaltenders out there are Mrazek, Chris Driedger, who had a really good year with Florida, obviously. Mike Smith, he's up there in age, but he had a good year with Edmonton. Auntie Ranta, whose health is always the issue with Auntie Ranta staying healthy. But there's a number of veteran goaltenders who have been in that 1A, 1B scenario now for a couple of years. And maybe you just got to go out and get one of those guys and then Swayman or Vladar behind him and see what happens. But that's going to be a very interesting thing to see what happens with the Boston Bruins. Lastly, before we get out of here, Dougie Hamilton, another one that's very interesting. Dougie Hamilton is going to be a pending unrestricted free agent with the Carolina Hurricanes. Sean, he fits with Carolina. I think he fits really well with Carolina. I don't know, and this is not necessarily me knocking Dougie Hamilton. Is Dougie Hamilton an elite number one 25-minute-a-night defenseman on another team that doesn't play like Carolina?
No. And I don't think he has to be. I think, you know, maybe
that's what he's going to get signed to be.
Maybe he should go have a conversation with Kevin Shattenkirk.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
Right. Yeah. Maybe have that conversation and think about what Kevin had in Tampa Bay and how he was sheltered a bit with some other really good defensemen. And then, you know, saying, I want to get paid, which is great. You want to get paid and I want to be a number one and I want to do all that. And again, not saying that Kevin played poorly or anything like that. The expectations just turn, right? And Dougie Hamilton's a huge part of a very good defense. You know, he's got some protection there in Slavin and Pesci and even Brady Shea. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't have to be that guy. But when you're not that guy, you don't get paid to be that guy, you know, and Carolina understanding what he's going to get was like, you know what, go figure out what your market is and then come back and talk to us. But I think are already moving on. And I think he's a luxury for them with the other defensemen that they have.
Yeah. And Jake Bean's coming up too. Yeah. I mean, he played in the playoffs, played well at times, didn't play well at times, but he's young, you know?
Yeah.
He's a luxury. When you have Slavin and Pesci and Shea, Dougie Hamilton becomes a luxury for you. There's no question about it. So that's good. But I ask you that question because I don't think he is either. I think he's a really good player who has a terrific skill set of what he does well. But he is going to get signed. If he goes to another team, he's going to get signed to be what he wasn't in Carolina. And I don't know that he's capable of being that. And that's why he said it's a good one, the Shattenkirk one.
But players love that. They love that opportunity because you don't get to be as good as Dougie Hamilton is without believing that you're a number one.
True.
You don't get to be as good as anybody is without believing that you're better than what your current team is doing until you're the guy, right? We're talking about high-end alpha personalities who want to be the guy. Kind of like you, Dan.
Oh, please.
At NHL.com.
I'm responding to that.
Kind of like you at NHL.com, right? You want to be the guy.
Yeah.
So Dougie Hamilton wants to be the exactly. So I think some of the happiest players in the NHL are the guys who figure out it's okay being number two.
Yeah.
Kind of like me on this podcast. I'm just along for the ride and I'm okay with that. And I let you take all the heat and I get all the glory that I need and we're good.
Yeah. We're not going to disagree. So we can end on that because that's how everybody will go out thinking and they would be thinking accurately.
We can't go out on that, Dan, because there's one other thing that's going on while all this is happening in the background.
Oh, my. And that's right.
That's the NHL draft.
Yes.
Is happening.
We got to mention those guys, right?
There's been news happening there. The number one pick, Powers, out of Michigan, the defenseman, said he's thinking about going back for a second year. Even if he goes number one at Michigan, it would be the first time that I can remember in a long time that the number one pick wouldn't play in the NHL the year he's picked. And even if he went back to Michigan, he still could, as we get back to a regular schedule, he could do the Cale Makar, you know, yeah. I'm going to finish up and then join the Colorado Avalanche in the playoffs. And then Matty Berniers, who's also from Michigan and is one of the top guys, is hurt, but he got hurt at the World Championships. He's going to be out for a bit, but they think he'll be back for World Junior tryouts and camps and everything else. So there's news happening on that front. Mike Morial and Adam Kimmelman, who work with us, have that all covered on NHL.com. Their stuff, now that we're in the third round and there's a little more real estate on the site, will start getting a bit more of a profile. And they also do a podcast called Draft Class. They do it every week. This week they had Central Scouting on talking about the Western Hockey League and those prospects there. And that's a tricky one because they played in a bubble and they played minimum games. And, you know, we're going to find out a lot about scouting at this draft more than any other, just because of the hardships that people have gone through to scout players. But we can't forget about the draft. I won't. That's where I got my start at NHL.com way back in the day in 2000. It was doing the NHL draft. That was my first big assignment, was doing all the prospects. So it's always had a soft spot in my heart. And Mike and Adam do as good a job as anybody in the NHL landscape and covering the prospects that we are going to introduce in the league in the next couple of years.
No question. We joke, I hope you joke, that I'm number one on this podcast and you're number two. I like to think we're even. If we had Mike and Adam on and we were talking about the draft, I would be number four. There's no question about it with my knowledge of the draft versus your guys' knowledge of the draft. So there's no question about it, but definitely check out Draft Class. They do a terrific job there. And like we mentioned before, The Chirp with Darren Millard, John Davidson was on. And I hope you enjoyed this one too, right? I mean, we want people to, hopefully those guys are popping our podcast, Sean, right?
You would think. Yeah. Quality knows quality, Dan.
That's right. Well, hope you enjoyed the interview with Scott Gomez. A lot of playoff talk. Who knows where we'll be when we come back at you next week. Could be in the Stanley Cup final already, or we could have a couple of game sevens on our hand. We'll see. But until then, enjoy the hockey.